people now see the stain in our will. Feel the stain in the people now. Deep dark gray fades into blue and nothing doing. How sad, who knew? Deep blue turns into gray and nothing turning seems to stay.
Listening to CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from unceded Musqueam territory, the University of British Columbia. This show is called The Burrow, on every Monday from 3 until 4 p.m. And that was Ott. Played them a couple times over the last few weeks. It was the opener to their new album, Room Inside the World, called Into the Sea. Ott was in town last Saturday, just this past Saturday, the 24th. Nice show. It was okay. I think, with any kind of, particularly with a band like this that is really starting to gain some notoriety and is playing sold out shows, wherever they may be, it has a real hip following, I'd say. There's a certain pressure to maintain that status. And then when there's the record that they're touring is this new one that I think in general for people that got into the band from what they were doing beforehand, which is this kind of neo post-punk thing that really just sounds like The Fall and other bands along those lines. this album's a bit of a departure and maybe something that's rubbing people the wrong way, or it's not as exciting, or not as, I don't know, it's not as cool. It's a little bit more theatrical, I think. Anyhow, that there's a pressure to then give the people what they want in the shows. And so their set, they did embrace the new album. They played 7 of the 9 songs overall on the new album. However, they skipped 2 of my favorite songs on the album, which was a little bit of a bummer. And then they played, I think, overall 5 older songs, some of the hits that really get the people going. But then also came on for an encore, which I'm never really a huge fan of the encore concept, especially when you're at a place like the Cobalt. It's just not necessary. And they came on and played 2 old songs after the set was finished. And so I could have gotten out of there before they even came back. Anyway, also this new album, it's so well produced and recorded that it won't always come all the way through in a live setting the way you might want. Anyhow, that's enough about Ought. Still a great record, and that was Into the Sea. This week on the show, I'm going to be playing a bunch of pre-recorded material. A few weeks ago, I played a bunch of recordings of poetry readings that were from a night called Records and Readings. And the second one of those happened a couple of weeks ago on March 9th. And I've got the recordings together. I'm going to play those today. So there's going to be a series of readings in one kind of performance-based thing from this performance night that I've been trying to start organizing at the Toes Collective. And so we're going to hear the recordings from that night, all of them minus one, which was a bit longer and involved multiple parts that don't necessarily translate into a recording like this. So those are going to be a set of poetry readings by Weldon Gardner Hunter, who's a local poet, has put together a bunch of his own little chapbooks. Going to be a story, a loosely Kate Bush-inspired story from Claire Geddes Bailey, who's a local writer who's starting to do some more readings and produce more material. Poetry and some other prose pieces from Marco Munoz, who's a local writer and artist who does an experimental electronic project called Encounter Exist here in Vancouver. So he did some readings. We're going to hear that. And then the last one we'll hear is from CITR's very own Duncan McHugh, who did a very entertaining deep reading, close reading of a disco song. So he was playing the song and doing a close reading of the lyrics and gave us his own interpretation of the song. Someone's very funny, and that will wrap things up. So, stay tuned. Hope you all enjoy. Before we dive right into that, I'm going to play one more song to transition there, which you would have heard this, I believe, on Chris's show before mine, but a band called Friggs, another buzzworthy Canadian band going right now, who put out a new record called Basic Behavior. Gonna listen to Doghead from that album. They are coming to Vancouver tomorrow night to play, but not only will they be at Redgate tomorrow night to play with BB and Shearing Pinks, but they'll be here at CITR to play live at 4 p.m. tomorrow. So keep your eye out for that posting and that, give it a listen tomorrow afternoon at 4 p.m. Friggs will be here live. So we're gonna hear a song from Friggs. And then on the other side, jump into the recordings from R&R Night 2, starting with Weldon Gardner Hunter. ¶¶
tuffet sweaty pies. He put his tuffet sweaty pies. Oh, did ya? He put his tuffet sweaty pies. He put his tuffet sweaty pies. Oh, did ya? Put his tongue in some pies. Oh, did ya? Did ya? Did ya kiss his tail? Kiss his tail. Kiss his tail. Put his tongue in some pies. He put his tongue in some pies. Oh, did ya? Did ya? Did ya? Did ya? Did ya? Did ya?
More interesting when they were less original. So maybe I can connect that to the poems I'm going to be reading. But actually, the more specific connection I make is that it's just an influential kind of like band that had lyrics that have influenced some of the poems I've read. And so just to explain myself really quickly, Weldon Gardner Hunter, I'm a poet. I have about 6 chapbooks out. Not one single trade book yet, but that's okay. So you, I'm pretty sure, are familiar with chapbooks. They're like the zine world of poetry. So I'm going to just read some poems that are, I would say, they're either loosely based around music or they have some sort of, the idea of writing poems where you're trying to get to something and maybe just come out of it with a cool line or two, which is kind of a terrible thing to admit. You should be saying that my whole, you know, every poem you write is painstakingly crafted, and you want every word and every line and every phrase to mean something. But I don't think that you don't always have to do that. So this poem is called Disposable Income. I opened my door to chili with a layer of red grease which would never really accumulate without a bigger budget. On the table, I placed finger bowls, peel the shrimp and dip them in. I hired sexy cheerleaders to migrate about the room with sweet bean and onion filling. A big honor in our princely junior year. I told my pals, let's make this a tax write-off, even though my job only pays me 3 pinto beans a week. I heard the fries being criticized more than I normally like to hear, but no more. We're just sitting around, not burning or stretching. Obese walkers, start your engines. There will be no more calories to count at the end of April. So that poem's actually about taxes. This one, if anyone here, I'm going to do some rock and roll moves now. Anyone here ever been to the Smile Diner on Pender Street? Yeah, okay, good. A couple more. I was expecting more people. This poem is actually, I guess, dedicated to the Smile Diner on Pender Street. And I hope it's still there. I haven't been down there in a while. So it's called The Divine Entire Gravy Boat, a poem for a hangover. Description: vintage bamboo waves keep Dr. Fu Manchu in melodious rounds in the divine force of a messianic vision to be. Microwave beans over which slivered almonds had merged the local flavors and divinely done away with gravity. Clarity, prismatic colors, and toast. Hues of fresh ideas and juice. Coffee steaming to just the right degree. Anyone acquainted with the minute wonders of minute steaks breathes in the greasy, soaked-in splendor. And for value, just to fill you up, there is a tenderness there as well. These are the last words you read on your stained, laminated menu as your eyes taper off and hang there in the air. Okay, so there's two poems that just mention beans, which is interesting. It's funny how when you, because I'm just picking things kind of at random here, and I'm kind of trying to get at like the kind of like phrase making that some of the records I listened to when I was young, where I have poems that have that kind of quality to them. So this poem's called The Entrance into North Vancouver. I'm also just going to do crowd-pleasing local references. The Entrance into North Vancouver. Seen from the boat, the greenery spreads around the houses, even just around the tugs. The color that nature screws around with includes unobtrusive clapboard blue. I can't help but notice this stuff. Unsure vistas divided by short distances. A shove out of place, a small displacement. Some coconuts thrown from the bridge float by a big heap of lemonade crystals. The wind you wouldn't wear your Maple Leafs jersey in. The pauses between the boat's throbs push your knees into blubber. On land, there are wine lists, tuna melts at the quay. So that's the third poem with food. Okay, I'm going to pick... This book is called Stella and Pony Ears. It's actually got like 89 poems in it. It's a pretty ambitious idea for a chapbook. And it became a little bit of a disaster in trying to... So what happens when you don't have an editor and you're a poet is that... and you also have a well-meaning hipster friend in Calgary, Alberta, who has a press. They keep telling you, hey, just send more poems. Like, they're all great. Put them all in. And so whatever you decide that week is like your favorite poem ends up in there, and they don't take it out. And then the thing becomes so big that you actually can't stitch it. And then we had to get some staples that were industrial grade after the fact. So a lot of these books are self-destructive. So if anyone has ever come across this book, you might find that all the pages have been like falling out because it was never able to be stapled correctly. So that wasn't supposed to be the case, but it became an interesting problem. So just to create a self-destructive book. So let's see. I'm going to read three more poems that are about. Vaguely about music, and then I'm going to read one that's dedicated to a friend of mine that's in that book, so I'll just finish off there. So this should only take about 5 more minutes. So here comes the hot stepper. Heavily cologned, slick R&B is not dead, but its popularity has faded somewhat, which is weird because now it's popular again. This was written a long time ago. I miss the subtle thrusts, sigh, accompanied by a sudden twitch or two of my left feet. In the new ordinariness, we can appreciate the folk festival again. Give me a hiccuping hillbilly any day, the arched body hanging from the coat rack. Music is not a universal language as some people pitch. It's a milkshake of frozen lumps and fluid sounds which storm to clarity. It seems that every cut is a clarification these days. Just because you like fiddle music, that doesn't make you a Celtics fan. There is a way of seeing a song in the open mic circuit. It begins innocently enough, with some strummed acoustic chords, and it doesn't stand out. But it recalls all the fragmented songs you've written at the lake. It has been miniaturized and diluted, and at every tune it whistles freely. So now I want to dance in circles on something other than my own hind legs. Maybe someone could put me in a red wheelbarrow and wheel me onto the dance floor? This one's called The City Learning to Eat. Thank you. Thank you. City Learning to Eat. When something good happens, my waistline inches up a fret. If I ever decide to tread lightly, it will be a civil marriage between reduced body fat and a moonlight obad. Seeking the good life you can actually buy a thermos for, though probably exorbitantly priced. So the best method I've been told is to follow the lifestyle. The odds of cooking my own food, corn on the cob side of Murphy's Law, beautifully nocturnal cheese slices. You can actually get a million free packets of ketchup at the front counter of Cultural Necessity. I didn't poison myself with Tums just now so that you could tell me that Italian food is some kind of new frontier. Whatever the ethnicity of the wedding, there is always time for jello shots and a sentimental slideshow. You can't spell leftovers without lovers. When we go out dancing, the DJ never packs a lunch. He is the DJ. He is also a condiment. That's why we see him on the table at Denny's afterwards, trying to think of recipes, trying to think of rhymes. It's hard times. This is the third in the the musical trilogy. Now here comes another Monday in B-flat. Body warming, lips a-glowing, sex simping, pants hanging on a branch. Sex simping is a song by Boyz II Men, I believe. Change the Viking weather of minute percentage. It was so fun to be out surrounded by apple orchards in the early morning and attempting to stuff more than one apple in my mouth. The apple tree is here to help keep our trust in times lacking in the cure for blue balls. What if I fall over it? The tree, that is. Then remembering my successful makeshift washing tank has produced strong results, softly bent. The customer service is not evident enough. They were eating and drinking without regard to us. I mean, whatever happened to the kind of neighbors you'd bring pie to? You seemed only too eager to slap some ass in the nads. There is no time to find a new place for art. We should cut it down, chop it up, remove the stump, and refertilize the area. Pour out what you need or freeze it for posterity. Like if Newton had been invented by Einstein, there might not have been an apple tree, and we wouldn't have gathered them apples, euphemistically. Just one more. And this is actually dedicated to my friend Jeff Johnson, so some of you might know, of OK Vancouver OK. And a bit of a background, because actually one of the things I was going to do with this performance, at one point I was really getting ambitious ideas, and I wanted to actually do a hardcore record, and then I was going to play it, and then maybe come up with some sort of narrative essay reminiscing growing up in the hardcore scene in Red Deer, Alberta in the 1980s, which I think would actually be, like, it's a story that needs to be told. But then as I started writing it, I just got stressed out. It became like an assignment for school, and it was just so corny. But the story is as I was in the hardcore scene, and in the 80s it was kind of because that's what, you know, you go to a show, there wasn't a lot of, it's amazing now to see a show in a place like this and see the sort of variety of bands that will play, and the variety of styles, but back in the 80s you would see a metal band and a hardcore band and maybe another metal band and then a hardcore band, and especially in places like Red Deer, Alberta. So we would go to those shows. The place was actually in Red Deer called the Highland House, which we called the Hardcore House, and it's actually, in the 60s it was called Eskimo Billiards, and that's where my parents met, so I always thought that's a beautiful kind of symmetries. My parents met at the hardcore show, well, the place where the hardcore shows were. And where, I'll tell one little story, is that I only, growing up in Red Deer, I was interested in punk rock, and I'd seen it on TV, so you see pictures or videos of 76 punkers pogoing, and I saw a video of like a couple strangling each other while they were dancing, while they're doing the pogo at a show in like 1976. So I went to the first hardcore show with my friend Danny Pryor, who took me to it, with generic hardcore bands, star straight edge bands. And I grabbed him and started trying to do that dance. And he was very, and then I learned how you're supposed to do the sort of hardcore dancing. This was probably mid 1986, 87. So it's one of those moments you remember and you're embarrassed. You know, you go to sleep and you're like, oh, that's right, I did that. I remember doing that. So I still am mortified there was a time where I didn't know the rules of how to be cool at a show. So anyways, so when Jeff Johnson played in Red Deer, Alberta, sometime about this decade, he was yelling probably to the confusion of all the young people at the show, I heard you guys like hardcore. I heard, so this poem's called Heard You Liked Hardcore for Jeff. Thank you, Slayer and Coterie, coming to grips with the chords of the world. Our publicists flood with anecdotes and bios, but everything is free here, for our camaraderie presses the wax before the record comes out, uniting the feet and the head with the concrete floor, but you can't crash here. What good is it knowing someone who can walk on water if I can't be in his choir? Cleanliness is next to godliness, which is the next best thing to being in a band. We do not hold this necessarily to be true, though the band in question was playing in the Smithsonian parking lot, and it's the best thing you'll ever see there. Guitar tabs in me, motioning me to follow you into various concept albums I've started listening to but never finished. You don't want to get shot in the lobby like Lee Harvey Oswald, but I don't think today will be the day. Take it from someone who knows what drunk bike riding will do to your low end. Road safety is this week's totally optional idea. Like if the cars reunited, it'd probably backfire. Pure rants to get the juices flowing. You can't sing or write fast enough. Food can't taste, and sight can't touch audio. Even Husker Du packed it in, saying goodbye to the people and places they thundered past. Time's wound loose from its spool. Cracked tape case on the floor of an 81 Datsun. I can't remember anything since my stereo got stolen. you should give me a shout. Thank you.
Capturing this really intense climactic moment in my songs, so I decided to try to do that in a story. So I'm going to read that now. And just a disclaimer, Kate Bush, I think, like, doesn't really shy away from cliche, so I didn't sign it. Okay. Jeannie and I are tired, so we sit down. Yes, we sit down, we sit, again and again like that, we sit. Sit and fold, fold paper in the day, fold. She insists and I fold, fold in, fold forwards and out. Fold our bodies into neat and tidy forms. Fold ourselves inwards, towards ourselves, into ourselves, hidden. We unfold. We untie knots, we straighten, iron out folds, creases. We fold our clothes, fold cloth, fold linen, sheets. Fold cloth like skin, like lips, like ears, looking at them so as to draw. We fold soft colored sheets and set carefully onto shelves. Take down for guests, unfold. Lift like a preschool teacher's parachute and lay down. Flow out and let fall. Throw folds out of it and set down flat. Stretch across a mattress, still creased from folding. After sleep, sheets wrinkle like crow's feet. Fold, crimp, crease. Dig through drawers and leave not folded but crumpled. Unfold folds make crumples. Crumpled fabric, crumpled paper. He crumpled, she crumples, they crumple, we crumple. Crumple into an armchair. Fold ourselves around an armchair. Fold dough. Fold strawberries into the batter, not stirring or overworking the mix. Fold with our hands folding. Folding grass around and over our fingers. Folding grass until hands covered in chlorophyll, the strand broken, spilling green juice. Sitting and folding in the yard. Laundry. Ironing, lift and fold with hands creased like tissue paper. Fold and unfold, double back and fold again. Again fold, back and forth until the fiber is warm enough to tear. Back and forth and back fold, then lay on the tabletop, flop one half over a straight edge and tear. Lay on the tabletop, right hand set flat and firm upon first half, left hand pulling down steady on the other, tearing. Pull and tear. Tear. Jeannie and I are old. Older than we think. Maybe 300 years old, and we've been folding all this time. Later, when we're both back home, I call Jeannie to tell her that I miss her, but neglect to say those words at all. Instead, just tell her the weather here. The weather and my aunt's health. Jeannie tells me she thinks the weather will go swift and quick, then quit. Smooth over into easy pieces. I love Jeannie. Jeannie has my whole heart in her hand, and she pumps it herself by hand all day. Every day, pump, 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 pump. I owe her a lot for that, Jeannie. Jeannie, I ask her, why didn't you go dancing this week? She normally dances every Tuesday, but this week didn't go. I know because I saw her lights on at home that night. She doesn't answer my question on the phone, but sends a card. Dear Miss, it reads, I'm not dancing this week because I've got foot pain. I've had it since we last walked together. I don't know why, but each time I set my foot down on the floor, it goes ping, 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 ping. Or it doesn't go that way, but that's the sound the pain makes when I set down my foot. Anyhow, it's not so bad. I'm sure it'll get better soon. I just might not be able to walk with you this week. Love, Jeannie. P.S. Don't worry, my hands are good as ever, pumping your heart. When I read this about Jeannie's feet, I cry. Jeannie and I have been walking together every week for a very long time. Walking, walking, one foot in front of the other, walking. Walking towards a landmark. Walking towards and past a landmark. Walking forwards and back. Walking and walking, feet pushing against the ground in a heel-toe swoop. Pushing against and off the ground, propelling forwards and repeating. Propelling, in fact, straight into repetition with the other foot. The pushing foot now swinging through the air off the ground until ahead of the other foot, which now pushes heel-toe forward and off the ground. Walking. One step, another step, walking. Walking side by side, our steps synchronize, we come together, happen at once. We walk forwards, straight forwards, until we find it necessary to turn. Then we turn. We turn and walk. We walk until our feet feel sore with ground, with contact with the ground. And then, as I said, we sit and fold. So I do cry over her feet because I love Jeannie and she pumps my heart. After thinking it through, I realize how tired Jeannie must be, pumping my heart all the time, and maybe I'd better chip in and pump hers, or rather her feet. Maybe I can heal her feet. Maybe I can pump them. I call Jeannie to tell her I got the card and I'm coming over. After I hang up, I sit down on the stairs and put on my left shoe, take the laces in my hands, fold one bunny ear, fold another bunny ear, then fold them together to form a bow. Then I put on my right shoe and perform the act again. I stand from the stairs and walk towards the door, open the door and walk to Jeannie. I find Jeannie at home in a cushioned armchair, bare feet up on an ottoman. She is watching television and holds the TV remote in her left hand. In her right hand, as always, she holds my heart, pumping it even now with perfect rhythm. When I arrive and see her this way, I am sad because she hasn't heard me come in. Her hearing is going bad and remains sunken in the chair, staring. In this attitude, I see she is frail and wrinkled. Her head is tilted all the way back to the cushion, so her eyes look almost shut, looking down at the TV. Jeannie, I say, and she looks over, smiles. Hello, miss, she says. Jeannie calls me miss even though my name is Louise. I think it is because I am younger than her by several years. Jeannie doesn't get up because of the foot pain. I push off my shoes without unlacing and step over to her. Crouch next to the armchair and take her hand, the one holding my heart. I sit and feel for a while, the regular movements of her tendons and knuckles as they pump. Jeannie, I say, you must get so tired hand pumping this heart all the time. Let me repay you. I move away from her hand and over to her feet, kneel down facing her with one foot in each hand. Jeannie looks amused. She does not think I can do it. She has taken care of me all this time and knows. I begin to squeeze and pump at her feet. The trouble is they are not the right shape at all for pumping, and besides, the pain is not blood-related. Jeannie begins to laugh, laughs and laughs with her wrinkled skin hanging off her waves. She chuckles, chuckles, chuckles until she can hardly breathe, chuckles until sound comes hardly out of her mouth any longer. I laugh too because Jeannie's laugh makes me, but I don't laugh long as hard as she does, because Jeannie's laughter just now makes me see that Jeannie is old as hell, and maybe I can't make her feet well after all, and actually the reason Jeannie can't walk with me any longer is not so much the foot pain as the age, and the age means she is dying. We'll die soon, likely, and without Jeannie to pump my heart, I suppose I'll die too, right along with her. I'm sitting there with Jeannie's feet in my hands and I realize this and I begin to cry. We sit there together like this, her laughing, me crying, both knowing full well about it, about dying, about how we're both going to do it and soon. Then the weather comes on the TV and we both stop to listen. The weatherman predicts a gust of wind knocking, pushing over, again over, 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 gusting, bag of groceries and flashiness, bag of sob. After this day, I begin to have dreams of Jeannie falling. In my dream, I am standing at the bottom of a large hedge, Sometimes a cliff on a mountain, sometimes a cliff in a canyon with a river at the bottom. In the dream, I've just arrived at the bottom and I'm looking back up at the path I've taken, waiting for Jeannie to follow me safely down. The thing is, I've gone much too fast for her, left her long behind me, and she cannot see the path I took, which got me to the bottom just fine. I'm standing there shading my eyes, looking up, waiting for her to come into my line of sight. And then she does. I see her coming down slowly in her way, coming down hesitantly, perhaps annoyed at me for having gone so fast and left her. I see her, and I see that she doesn't see the edge from where she is above it. Or she sees it, but doesn't see the drop beneath it. I see this, but I'm too far away to stop her, my voice too distant to reach her, to tell her to stop, to go around, to take another route. I'm standing helplessly at the bottom again and again, watching her slide towards this edge, towards this fall. It happens over and over again, her sliding towards the edge. The dream shows me from all different angles. Jeannie about to fall. And then she does fall, it happens. And like the lead up, it happens over and over again. Jeannie going over the edge and falling, the pit dropping in my stomach, and she slips over the edge, over, 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 and she is falling. Then back at the top, going over the edge again. By this point, I'm half aware that it's a dream, and I think I'll wake up before she hits. Despite the dread, I trust the dream not to let me see the hit. But then it happens, and I don't wake up. I see the whole thing. Her body crumpled, her legs break, her at the bottom lying with blood around her. Jeannie, dead or dying. Jeannie in pain. Jeannie in mortal pain, and her hand that pumps, now pumping my heart wildly in the middle of dying. Jeannie finally needing my help, and I am so far away. I am running and running towards her, but not moving forwards. My muscles tensing and working, but my feet failing to push off the ground, failing to propel at all, and I cannot reach her, cannot reach Jeannie. Eventually, I drag myself awake and out of the nightmare. Turn over in bed, push the dream away and out of my head as well as I can. In the morning, calm myself by folding the sheets, picking up my clothes one by one from the floor and folding them into drawers. Taking the newspaper from the counter and folding it neatly on the table. Later, I go to Jeannie's and see her in her armchair, skin wrinkled into folds all about her, and I think we don't have to fold anymore because Jeannie is already all folded up. I fold myself onto the armchair next to her and tell her the weather one more time. Sun to come up from under the skin, the water pump, I'll fetch you a glass. Like blood jumping.
Want to know what's up at UBC? Read the UBC. It's only the largest student newspaper in Western Canada, and it's written and edited entirely by UBC students. The UBC is your source for on-campus news, culture, and sports. New editions come out every Monday and Thursday. For breaking news as well as amazing videos and blogs, check out ubc.ca.
Witchcraft is all about. I think you'd best go down and deny it yourself. The parlor's packed with people, sir. I'll sit with her.
And what shall I say to them? That my daughter and my niece I discovered dancing like heathen in the forest?
Uncle, we did dance. Let you tell them I confessed it and I'll be whipped if I must be. But they're speaking of witchcraft.
UBC Theater and Film presents The Crucible by Pulitzer Prize winner Arthur Miller.
Join us March 15th to 31st for the last play of the season at the Frederick Wood Theater.
Theaterfilm.ubc.ca.
What newspapers and magazines did you regularly read to stay informed and to understand the
world?
I've
read most of them, again, with a great appreciation for the press, for the media.
But like, what ones specifically?
All of them.
Want to know more than Sarah Palin? Join CITR's Current Affairs Coordinator, Alex DeBoer, every Tuesday from 4 to 5 p.m. in room 2514 in the AMS Nest to learn best practices for covering local current affairs topics for radio. The weekly training sessions will cover writing for radio, determining newsworthiness, media ethics, interviewing, writing balanced stories, and more.
Tune in to Post Rock Friday from 10 to 11 with your host John P for the best in post rock, drone, ambient, experimental, and noise.
You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting as always from Muncie to Musqueam Territory, the University of British Columbia. This program is called The Burrow. This week, playing recordings from a show that happened on March 9th, which was a series of readings and performances based on the people would choose records that they like or grew up with or whatever and wrote or performed something based on those. And it's happened at the Toast Collective on March 9th. What we've heard thus far was a set of poems from Weldon Gardner Hunter, local poet, and then a story by Claire Geddes Bailey, local budding writer. The next thing we're going to hear is some poems and prose pieces from Marco Munoz, who's a local artist who does a musical project called Encounter Exist. And so I figured I'm going to play a track from Encounter Exist. There's not much that you can find online. It's a bit of a mystery. But there is a SoundCloud page with some songs. We're going to listen to a song called Void 9. He'll also be playing as part of the Wirespine tape release, which is happening later on this week. So we're going to listen to an Encounter Exist song, and then on the other side of that, we'll hear the writings from Marco Munoz, the man behind Encounter Exist. And then wrapping things up, we're going to hear a more lighthearted, funny piece from CITR's own Duncan McHugh, host of Duncan's Donuts, which happens every Thursday, 12 to 1 here at CITR. All right, so this is The Burrow on CITR 101.9 FM, and this is Encounter Exist. Thank you.
this phone thing.
My name is Marco Munoz. I'm an immigrant. I'm also a poet of violence. All right, so everyone who's come on here, Weldon and Claire, they've been really nice. Very, well, in a sense, warm. The things that I'm going to do right now might be a little disquieting. Probably not. So I think I have to say something about the music I chose, right? So the stuff that I chose, because while I was reading through the stuff that I might do tonight, most of the stuff was done in a period of time when I was living in Mexico City, 2012 2014, 15, and so of course there was a lot of music that was done throughout that period, a lot of friends, a lot of things that I lost now, and I thought I would give them just a little more life tonight, just putting them on. And of course there's no theme as such. It's like imagine that you're watching Jurassic Park, but as you're watching the movie, there are no fucking reptiles anywhere. You never see any reptile anywhere, but you sort of feel that they're omnipresent. So that is the that's what's gonna happen right now. It's not about the music. It's not about this. This is the feeling like there's some kind of tension going around the stuff that I do, the things that I feel, and like a T-Rex or one of those fucking things that spit shit in your eyes. Right, so I'm going to do something that might be very unpopular. Do you guys know Spanish? Any of you guys know Spanish? You do? Fantastic. Just a little bit. Everybody knows a little bit of Spanish. I mean, Mexico's apparently very popular with people from Vancouver. They ask me where to go to eat, and I'm like, fuck, I don't know. Anyway. You know? So, okay, what I'm going to do is one piece of narrative, two pieces of poetry, and then somebody else will come along and we'll still, you know, have a good time. If anybody wants to buy me a beer after this, you can be assured that the gods of Mexico, because we have many gods, of course, they're going to treat you right. I'll put in a word for you. And if not, we'll fuck you. This story, I wrote it in... Okay, so it's a story that's divided into it's Spanish for one half, and then English the other half. So obviously you're not going to understand anything, but there's the first half you're not going to understand, but the second half you're going to love it. Honestly. Just focus on whatever you want. I mean, whatever Spanish evokes for you, you know, Latin lovers or good times or narco dudes. Okay. Ahora cuando sueño y me despierto, el tiempo parece que se apendeja. Es decir, sé que estoy despierto, pero por algo las cosas no están como estaban antes de dormir. La ventana parece una barranca que están haciendo, que se forma en ese instante, una barranca donde todavía no han aventado a nadie. Una barranca como las de la sierra que tienes que cruzar para llegar a Veracruz y donde a veces la cubre totalmente la niebla. Y las luces del auto o del autobús solo iluminan unos pocos metros de la carretera. Y entonces la sierra parece esconder cosas que olvidaste y que saltarán delante de ti en cualquier momento. No puedo despertar con claridad. Me levanto y me tropiezo hacia la ventana y me quedo fijado. Por momentos siento vértigo porque parezco estar ahí al filo de la barranca, viéndola crecer y vestirse de niebla y de lejanía. Son las 10:40 de la noche y volteo a una esquina de mi casa y veo por un segundo a otro hombre con cruces negras en vez de pupilas. No tengo dinero, no tiene que comer mi hijo y mi esposa. Tengo que salir a pedir prestado. Cuando duermo, la vida se repite desbocada en mis sueños. Ahora algo de los sueños se desboca sobre esta noche. Quisiera tener una palabra para usar como vela y como salvoconducto, para decirla y decirla, y junto con ella, tras innumerables repeticiones, perder el sentido. The other side of the coin. I have never been here before. I mean to say, I've walked the streets and I remember them from when I was a small child, holding on tight to my mother. A brief, undisturbed flash of things past that stick out for no apparent reason. From these much more recent times that I know these streets and vaguely accept their unconditional stuff and the endless flow of people and traffic, and yet tonight I don't know this place. When I think of fucking, I try to look at the world, its springs, the particular varieties one might find oneself libidinally attached to. In this kind of place, I can only think of rape, of abduction, of mysterious Lincolns or Cadillacs rushing in to snatch one of these unmarked pedestrians, unannounced but inextricably expected, and what follows, the quick getaway and the breaking lights, leaving a wobbling trace of hieratic writing that nevertheless marks the highest and the inevitable, marks inoculating land away into darkness. Someone can be taken and be found with their feet tied to a drain pipe upside down in a place so very vast, in an abandoned shack at the edge of civil urbanization, body defiled in a place best left to its volatile, lawless inertia, a place so very vast and unknown and always breaching and reforming its boundaries closer to our hygienic state and sea. A place that defiles its inhabitants as a rule, and you'll be as certain of its inevitability as unmoved as to the reasons of the crime. The newspapers read some kid was shot inside a movie theater, a 10-year-old in Iztapalapa, who was rushed to the nearest hospital, its name something European, died 2 days later, while the movie kept on rolling and the audience presumably resumed their entertainment. There's a widespread appeal of keeping this sort of story alive in such a way you read about the tragedy and read on and find yourself straining with a paragraph or two, describing not the causes, but the minute details of the aggravated. A skull MRI and the father negotiating with the manager of the cinema for undisclosed reasons. The bullet lodged inside. Ballistics. I could just as much see your body decomposed and swallowed and lost and then nothing. Of course, this is all something I keep telling myself to divert my thoughts from this otherwise innocuous scene. A gang of grossly anachronistic punk drowning in industrial inhaler, eyes bloodshot, fixed to the traffic for which there is no proper analog other than these imbeciles witnessing its immediacy. Nailed to a tree, one can appreciate a niche caging a Catholic saint, and an unlit candle and a prayer written in a kind of cursive one can only learn in masochist mundanity. And it reads, "Free me of all sins of the flesh, amen." And the hostility exhaling from every passerby treading the soft sidewalk and sinking into it ever so slowly, a scene that runs undisturbed as if someone had written it off an improbable secular Bible and believed every word of it. Hey man, are you okay? This kid looks terrified, and I could understand why. Though I don't say this to him, I am only trying to catch a glimpse of his eyes. He seems to be having a fit, a silent, inward convulsion, and for no reason at all, I feel the urge to grab a hold of him and let him know it's okay. I get distracted by a man selling luminous balls that bounce and light up in pale neons, that metamethemize the casual metro user harmlessly. And for a moment, I'm gripped in horror, thinking this kid has jumped down the metro's railway. I zoom again a second later, framed by a widely stored window isolated in xenon light, and something is condensed upon him, is brought upon him, and is both meaningless and extending beyond his body into the neighborhoods of Benito Juarez. For some reason, this marked the beginning of something unbearable for me. When I got home, I packed my belongings and thought of this kid and thought of happier times. I kept thinking about it during the 7-hour flight during which I drowsed, looking out the window and the horror dissipating in the vast and diminishing swelling of streetlights that seemed a desperate replica of night skies from before cities layered across this valley, and it seemed to swell and rock me to sleep. A swelling creeping up the mountains above which I dreamt I had become a child again. So that's the thing. Is there time for something else, Andy, or should I just one more? Okay. I obviously edited most of the Spanish part out because, you know, it's just ridiculous. But, but it's beautiful. If you guys want to know what it means, you know, just a beer and I'll tell you all about it. All right, one poem. Okay, guys, I'll let you off the hook. I love this thing. I haven't written a sentence with my hand in like 10 years. So this is good for me. This poem is called New Senses. Oh, staring of children strung to the nights of rape. Oh, body of nature ahead, making human forensic detectives into it, universal rape. Oh, nothing is nature to me. Can I touch you? Oh, human muscle, a placeless rape in different oaks and willows and holes too immense for any one of our names. Oh, human organization so bereft of its place. Oh, humanity pulsing in a knot like a morning star of flesh rising in the reincarnation of a day that cannot be. Swelling cause that poetry's hands have sought, revoking the learning of languages. Oh, the angel running from its transparent bowels, it did not know what it is to fall. Trembling for the occasion of rape has risen above the horizon. The earth is human. Can you make it disbelieve? The eternal limb, the motion of faces. There is no sexual organ but the center that cannot be grazed further by the tension inside. The gravity of desire, snapping bones, it's dark now. No prophet that is not honored here tonight. My heart sometimes beats with a second force. What can we do besides falling apart? I have no pity. My new senses have brought me closer to ruin. To make contact with God and imagine the last winter, the hand still in the grip of death or truth. Where am I taking you, my son? I think I'm otherwise a very nice guy. Last one. You'll get me the beer, Andy. Yes. You're very happy with this. I know you are. All right.
One more. I don't know. One more, maybe. Maybe not. Okay, yes. Alright, this is not from Mexico City. This is the first time I moved to this city, but I wasn't living in Vancouver. I was living in Port Moody. What a weird place. They opened like 4 breweries and all of them make poor beer. I'm very disappointed. I don't know if you could. You don't go there. Maybe the ice cream. The ice cream is pretty good. You guys know it? Rocky Point ice cream?
Yeah.
Lovely. I've never tasted anything like it. Maybe. Severed Woods. Oh yeah, I live like next to the mountain. And that's the first time I understood that sometimes human beings live next to wild animals. I'm a guy from the city. Wild animals are my fellow human beings, not bears. It's weird. So you guys do it, so. Well, I do it now. So. He walks into the severed woods. He comes to an area claimed by the sun where he can see billows of smoke and vapor, one coming out of one house and moving to the right, the other a vastness moving through the valley. Birdsong and horror. Birdsong, one merry and its other like a knife in the hands of autism. I close my eyes and look upwards. The jolting of the brain. Oh, last night, the story of the tumors that grow inside the skull, a glistening branch that abysses the fugue of perspective, the blue gum. I use these words, but I mean awe. The drama in the rising winter trees. I look back and witness the damp corruption of the sun upon my eyesight. How the greenery became alien, a benevolent disease. As if I had stumbled upon an angel's own palette of vision, its consciousness, a prohibited consciousness, a palette not consisting of colors, but in the presentations of colors, in how one is superimposed by the other in the structure, or in the tonality, in the corruption, it's how does a color become fire? Like a trauma that will not rest, and color the memory, yes, color the present. So did the sun corrupt my eyesight and allow that golden to grow within the green like some eternal cancer, and God did I know beauty as it could never be separated from horror. Yes, my aching joints, the bloody phlegm, speaking to the sun, will you not take me yet? The horror suggesting a way of life is taken, you will not take me yet. Not yet, because I have come here, this universe, I have a claim to truth and nothing else. It's as if I had stumbled upon an angel's depression. It's as if I had fallen into an angel's depression. He's painting this obscene music. And he's painting, he paints with light. That's it.
At Dunkin' Donuts, each and every
radio show
is brewed fresh and served fresh at the peak of its flavor. If you're a tough customer, only the taste of this
radio show
will do. So go ahead, let Dunkin' Donuts make your
radio experience
exquisite.
Indeed.
Dunkin' Donuts, serving sweet treats from the Pop Underground. Thursdays, noon to 1.
Big thanks to Weldon, Claire, and Marco. That was fantastic. Very powerful stuff. And I'm very much looking forward to seeing Adrian Garbage Streams coming up. And also a big thanks to Andy for putting this on. Andy Resto, everyone. And big thanks to the Toast, Casey and Aaron. Thank you so much for hosting. So, my plan is to do something a little bit different than the other things that have been presented. I really hope this is funny, and I'm doing an unscripted sort of critical reading of a song, and that song is called Get Down Saturday Night by Oliver Cheatham. And I first heard this song in a movie, which is not a cool way to find out about a funk song from the 80s, but that's how I came to it. So has anyone here seen Ex Machina, that movie from 2015?
Yes.
Yeah, great movie. I really like that movie. Pretty dry movie. Kind of like not a lot of humor or levity in that movie, except one scene. Do you know the scene that I'm talking about?
Yes.
Yeah. So the genius Steve Jobsian android designer does a dance with his assistant slash maybe android, you're not sure yet, and it comes out of nowhere, and it's my favorite scene in the movie, but it doesn't fit anywhere else in the movie. And I heard that song, and I was like, that's an amazing song. I gotta find out about that song. That song is Get Down Saturday Night by Oliver Cheatham. It's also featured on the Grand Theft Auto Vice City soundtrack for you video game heads out there. I know this because when I downloaded the MP3, that's the artwork that came with it. So I don't have the record. You can buy it for $15 on Discogs with $20 shipping to Canada. But for the purposes of tonight, I'll be playing it. And so I'm gonna play a bit, gonna talk a bit, play a bit, talk a bit. So this song, Get Down Saturday Night, there's an illustrious tradition of pop songs about Saturday night. So you've got right? Bay City Roller, Scotland's famous, okay, Bay City Roller, yeah. Saturday night, it's time to get loose and have some fun. Just get wild on Saturday night, right? And then you have Wakefield.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah. So Wakefield Saturday night, in the club. You know, these are all party anthems about how great Saturday night is. And the way that it's used in the movie, it just seems like, hey, it's a funky song. We're gonna boogie with my Android assistant. Like, just having a good time. That's what this song is about. So let's give a listen to this song. From the beginning. How about from the top? Here we go. Alright. So yeah. This is like a good party song. I'm feeling no pain. All I'm feeling is the groove. All of it is shifting to me. Alright, here we go. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Should I bring it back there and like flag to you?
Is it turned down on your
mic? Oh, I'll turn it down. I'll turn it down. Okay. Alright, here we go. Let us see. Okay, so you can kind of hear that. Get down Saturday night, right? Okay. Get down Saturday night. Get down Saturday night. That's all I'll say. But it's important. So it starts off, it's just your good time weekend song. You're ready to go out and get really drunk and do all that stuff. Is he talking about? Okay, the song is called Get Down Saturday Night, and he comes in and it's Saturday morning, Friday's enemy. This is not just a feel good weekend party song, there is more to this song going on. Okay, listen closely because it's hard to hear. Housework is calling me, but where to begin? Okay. New song. We are not talking about just a get down, have fun on Saturday night song. We are going to a different tradition of weekend song. We're going to something like this. Working for the weekend. Suddenly, this is a song about the struggle of the week, trying to get to the weekend, have fun. This is a much more complex pop song now. It's not just about hedonism. This is about the struggle for good times and adversity. All right. All right, so back to Get Down Saturday Night. So this is about a guy who likes to have fun on the weekend, but the rest of the week, he's just a hard-working man. On the weekend, he likes to let his hair down, have a little fun. Okay. Kids are out of school. dad who likes to party. And he cares about his kids, but he also likes to party. This is a song that I identify with. I am a dad who likes to party, and suddenly this song means something to me. Crystal Riffick, are you a dad that likes to party?
No.
Matthew, you're a little bit of a dad who likes to party. Okay, so it's not easy. There's a lot of tension in the life of a dad who likes to party, cares about his kids, but tries to... So that's what this song is about, I think. All right, let's keep listening.
Everybody's
fun, okay. All right, so there I have to just, like, make love till the morning come. That's a lot. That you're going to stay up late. That is a long time to be making love. You know, it's great, but as a parent, we will revisit this issue. Okay. Some fun. Yeah, that's pretty evident there. Everybody asks you, hey, who here likes to party? Am I right? We all like to party. Everybody does. We wait for the weekend. See what you get into. I like his attitude. You know, he's not building it up. You gotta get down. Okay, that's another great point. So, as a parent, you don't always get to go out. If something comes up, the sitter cancels. Even if you stay at home, you got to get down. You got to have fun. It's crucial. You got to make the most of it. Live your truth. Okay, so the narrator of the song, let's call him Party Dad. Party Dad is at home. The sitter is canceled, but he's still trying to get down. All right. You're not blasting music when you're getting busy because you're going to wake up your kids. So, again, there's some inconsistencies about his approach here that I'm not. Okay. He keeps saying, have myself some fun. I don't know, it doesn't sound like a very generous lover making love till the early morn, and he constantly talks about, have me some fun. You gotta think about your co-parent. Think about your partner. Okay. Alright, so yeah. Who is gonna be up when those kids wake up, right? Who is gonna take care of those kids when they wake up in the early morn, and you've been making love all night? Right? I asked some people, maybe it's a side piece. Maybe he's stepping out on his baby mama. I think there's something else going on here. Let's keep going. Does the West Coast not get any love? Okay. All right. What does this sound like to you?
The breakdown.
Now, I've asked people, I asked Anna, my wife, and she was like, that's just a synthesizer. But to me, those sound like sex noises. But they're not the kind of noises that you make around someone else because they would get out of the mood. That is the sound of a dad who is jerking off until the early morning on his own, listening to music, listening to the sweet song, And he's just like, yeah, he's masturbating all night long, listening to the music, making gross noises that no one else can hear, because everyone else is sleeping, which is normal, what you do in the middle of the night. Party Dad has realized he's been jerking off for way too long. The sun is up, and he's realizing, like, oh, no, 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 what have I done? It is the early morn, and I am screwed for tomorrow. The kids are going to be hungry very soon, and they're going to be up. And guess what happens? One of these throaty sex sounds. What do you hear now? The laughter of children. The children have woken up. Party Dad, you're fucked. You were jerking off all night, and now the kids are up, and you're going to have to start slinging breakfast cereal. You have ruined your Sunday, is what has happened to Party Dad. Okay, let's go. All right, so the laughter of children. In this haze, he gets up and serves breakfast. What does he think to himself? As he... Already thinking about next Saturday. That's Party Dad for you. You're just thinking about, you can't wait for next Saturday. So I have a brief story about Party Dad. Just as this song finishes up. So, you know, there are pitfalls to being a party dad, which centuries of alcoholic gambling negligent fathers could attest to. But the one that sticks up for me is a few weeks ago, the musician John Mouse came to town. I am a huge John Mouse fan. I'm so excited to see John Mouse. I couldn't really talk to other people. I was just too anxious. And I heard my daughter say that she lost a tooth at school that day, but I was like, okay, that's nice. I'm in my mouth zone. I can't really, okay. But like, I had to go out. I got to the Biltmore with Carmita, and she can attest. I was like, I was a mess. I was so excited to see John. And came home, and I couldn't really sleep. I was just like wired. Woke up the next morning, pretty groggy. And I walk into her bedroom, and she looks at me and says, "The tooth fairy didn't come last night." Oh no! And I said, "Oh, are you? Oh!" And I'm not doing well. And I say, "Are you sure?" She says, "Yeah." And you know what? What I said was, maybe she forgot. And she said, no, I don't think she forgot. I think you and Mom are the tooth fairy and you forgot. Oh, no. That is not how I wanted to go down. I didn't want to be confronted in a concert. Like, my ears were still ringing. I was like, no. And I realized she had lost it to the school. So she had like a special container that the tooth went in. It didn't go in the pillow that she got from her grandmother, which is how she normally has her pillow. Save me. I was like, oh, well, did you have any special pillow? She's like, no, I just had a new thing from school. I was like, oh, well, tooth fairy won't come if it's in a plastic case. You can find a new special pillow. The tooth fairy has standards. Try it again. And the tooth fairy came back. Okay.